rather than sort of merging the state sovereignty. So it's difficult because sovereignty, the idea of the state is such a really complex idea that I think sovereignty does sort of represent a proxy for a lot of different concepts. And when you try to sort of break those apart, it can be extremely complicated. So I think rather than actually go into the details of the theory, it'd probably be easiest if I just sort of rested with the with my description of the discourse.
For any questions?
I have a question.
It's going to be a hard one.
Over the last year, as we worked on it, paid a lot of attention to the news story. If you read the New York Times or just about any other major paper, it seems like almost every single day there's a major story about something involving the internet. And say, for instance, Central's tragedy that happened in Denver the other day, and people are trying to point fingers. One of the things that I've heard a lot, people talk about is the possible involvement of a web page or the internet writ large and how that affects things, or how that might be relevant. When people talk about regulating the internet and sort of they would say boo internet, people don't quite understand it. What have you learned that might help direct some policy? Or when people just say, the internet is bad and they don't quite understand it, is there any response to people saying, bad websites or bad ideas are dangerous because they allow people to organize in ways that they weren't able to organize before and can lead to things like cameras?
Or what's at stake? Start there.
This
sort of discourse that you described is bad.
Well, that's sort of one way to get at what I've discussed in my paper, which is in many ways you can see the internet as accentuating sort of the pluralistic society in which we live, and that at the lowest level you can see our pluralist society as pretty much embracing every sort of interest. I mean, you go on the web, you can find sites that, for instance, advocate pretty much anything. I mean, there's a search engine for fringe groups, so you can go out and you can find the goth websites, and you can find all of these. And to an extent, I mean, you can really find a community out there that would pretty much support you in, I think, any type of endeavor, because there's what it allows is it allows you sort of, rather than just being sort of the lone crier in a town, you can reach people who would be who share your interests. And so in that sense, I mean, nothing really changes about our society other than the fact that it accentuates the fact that people are very different, and rather than sort of having the pressure of sort of a geographic community to sort of force conformity on people, or at least to sort of sublimate their differences, the internet actually allows people to sort of pursue those differences. And my perspective is that basically that's one of the reasons that governments will continue to regulate, is because what happens is that a Tennessee community, for instance, will have a very particular attitude towards pornography. It's very easy for California perspectives to basically infiltrate that community's concept of who they are. And for that reason, they feel compelled to regulate. That's my impression of it.
But Jane, you're saying that the internet has its own community standards that it carries. Are the governments attempting to regulate them sort of on the wrong side of history, is this a struggle of which the picture is not yet clear?
Well, part of that.
And should we root for one side or the other?
Part of, I think, what I would call sort of the postmodern concept of sovereignty, which relates basically to sort of the postmodern concept of social organization, which is basically that geographic notions of identity are deteriorating, and that more and more, for instance, people have multiple visas and passports, that they don't have an allegiance to a particular community. And so in that sense, it does seem that, to the extent they have any allegiance to sort of the community of their choice. And in some ways, that's very good, because if you feel that you have an interest that you can't your local community is requesting, it allows you to sort of to express your sort of multivariated interests and personalities. So for some, that might be a very good thing. But basically, I don't know if it's really necessarily bad or good. I think that it's a mistake, though, to say that geography will not play a role in creating identity, and that proximity, that geographic proximity seems to, and I think I'm actually sociological and social psychological research that's just come out that reaffirms that there are distinct cultures that still exist that are based entirely on geography. And so for that reason, because interests and values will continue to be shaped largely by geography, at least in my view, that governments will continue to be frightened by the concept of the pluralistic internet.
The other thing that would be interesting in my perspective, that brings up a lot of good points, I guess, but it's interesting in my part, I talked a little bit about I had to cut out a lot of this again because we're confined by a lot of things, including like structure and page length. But I was really interested in sort of the community cooperative networks. I mean, I know they're not, thriving, but at the same token, that you could find sort of this fringe group across the country that brings together 10 people that may never have met each other otherwise, and that was the sort of fuel to this dangerous fire. At the same time, you can imagine a community having sort of dialogue online after a tragedy like that, which would be impossible in real space, in a sense. Like, I mean, everyone, if you go to the school auditorium and talk like that, of course, there's all sorts of, like, even if you're in a room mediated by this framework, there's sort of different norms, and you can't have as much of an open discussion. You can imagine a friend discussion group or other sorts of online architectures that could enable a community itself actually to come together in the face of a tragedy like that. And so it's kind of on the one hand, on the other hand, I guess. But just when you said that, I was thinking of all the sort of new ways the internet could enable a community to heal and to connect with itself and to kind of, so there's all sorts of potential out there. But the scary thing to me also in that would be sort of the filtering process and just how much the architecture matters what you can do out there. But if those kids had some program which may be developed in, maybe here now, maybe in 5 or 10 years, where their parents or whoever gave them the program can tell them exactly where they can go. I mean, almost like that makes you want to turn off my internet totally. Like, it doesn't have to be kind of programmed through there. Maybe I run across that. Maybe I run across, like, some new music that I like. I mean, as soon as you start to sort of tailor the experience so much in response to that, that would be my fear, would be that we start to have, you get online and you kind of think you know what the universe of things is out there because the software tells you that's what it is when there's this much broader range of interests possible. So as much as it's great in a way that you can kind of bring up with these interests that you already have, what is your preset interest, and, Do you really come to the same in a world where everything is just on the internet? Like, how do you generate these pre-internet preferences when the world is just the internet? And who could tell us what those are? So I don't know. It's just a couple of responses, but I really do feel like the community potential is both. I mean, it's really at odds with each other. There's the potential for sort of this joining and for this sort of divisiveness. And I think it's interesting how some networks have really succeeded in like kind of bringing. There's that great example of Microsoft, which I thought was really silly at first, where they tried to get the Block people in London together, but people started actually talking to their neighbors more than like you just walk by the same people every day and never say anything. All of a sudden, they have an internet chat group, and you're talking to people on the Block and talking to each other. So I can imagine it could cut both ways. Kind of weird like that.
Also, in terms of sovereignty, I agree with you that geography is not going to evaporate as a major concern. But I think you're also going to start seeing issues of sovereign groups within cyberspace, not, kind of using sovereign in a more generic sense than your specific. So, like, take, one user group or one mod and another mod and another move, and you have one group violate the other's virtual rights online, where does that get arbitrated? And does the government, but does a sovereign state in geographic space regulate that?
Well, no, I mean, under my conception, there would be no, because basically, like, under my conception of the state, which I've yet to be able to articulate verbally, is the government still threatened, I suppose you'd say, by the internet when a normative perspective or when a particular value appears to affect their prescribed jurisdiction. In that case, for instance, they might feel threatened, for instance, if it had like a spillover effect, so that people for whatever reason felt that it would pose community risk. But in most cases, I think you're referring to though, like for the Medicaid or
if you take something like that, you read a rate cyberspace by double.
Yeah.
Take something that extrapolate that for a community against another community, individually within a community.
Yeah.
Would you get to spillover? Do you get the software created and made available for bombing and destroying a virtual community to affect a community that has geographic roots?
I think that's really tough. I suppose, in many ways, it's hard to say because it sort of depends on how the community, how the people within the geographic community would actually react to that case. It seems if people are so dispersed as though the conflict is really entirely online rather than having any sort of effect in geographic space. And I think that it will continue to be addressed as conflicts over, for instance, Medicare are just now, which is basically between sort of a contract dispute that just sort of is private and then state doesn't really involve itself.
The article addressed the power of the government to simply shut down on the site. The second case, Joan here referred to the situation in Denver. Let's say you have a site, he says, here's how you make a bomb. I'm not advocating making a bomb, I'm just telling you, you can do the following things you can make a bomb. The Chinese government can, under their presently your concepts, or whatever, something like that. That's the dangerous side, and I'm going to shut it down. I'll block it or whatever it is.
I'm not familiar offhand with any cases that reached
there. I think it's denied certain share in a case like that, but it wasn't an internet case. Is that correct? Do you know?
We had a Nuremberg file case. I was taken down in the United States of here immediately in Holland, I believe.
But that also, maybe I don't really understand the internet, but isn't it possible for the government with this?
There would be two problems. One would be a practical problem, whether it actually could. And the other one is it physically? Well, I would suspect no. I mean, I know that the current problems now.
You can't block
it. I think, to take a crack at that, I think that I don't think there's anything stopping the government from trying to do that. I think that, like Bobby said, just practically, it might be very difficult if you had a determined person who would go, you know, outside of the United States to make that website available. But then even if the government were trying to create a statute to try to stop something like that, I think it would have to be very carefully crafted. If you just look at the Communications Decency Act, the provisions that have been struck down because they're generally overbroad. The government would have to narrowly craft a prohibition saying that these are the reasons or these are the types of sites or whatever that we're going after. So if it met that hurdle, though, and it you could get over the practicality problem, I don't see anything that stops the government from trying to do that. I think that one thing that our Evo sort of says as a whole is that this assumption that with this sort of past cliche that the internet is not going to be regulated, that the government has no business regulating the internet or trying to prevent bad things from happening, that's a thing of the past. That's kind of silly pie in the sky thinking. And we try to, basically operate from the assumption that the internet is going to be regulated, but let's try to regulate it in the best possible way.
In your example, I just want to paralyze and think of the anonymous remailer thing where they have there's a law of one scare case to say for any anonymous speech, and what they do is you bounce your email off to like Finland, and then the Finland will dump all these anonymous messages into the U.S. How are you going to fight that? I mean, I came across a couple of sources in which the governments are trying to enforce at least civil damages against these companies, so you can bring civil suits. Again, this would not be a First Amendment case or whatever. This may not be. I mean, you could conceivably imagine some sort of a civil damages award being a judgment being rendered against one of these forums. I know that's how they're doing it in this context.
And that is what shut down NFI.
Right. So
it was the government that got involved with civil suit.
So in a government generated law which gives you a civil action to shut these people down. So even if you can't get them to prosecute or whatever, I don't know. You can imagine calling them into the US court and at least staffing their resources that way.
And model that may be easier for us to kind of apply rather than sovereignty, and that's the market. I think that the model of the internet is a market model, which means that some depend on voluntary activities of individuals. I hook to it, I buy or I don't buy. That's my business, nobody else's. But even like markets, we have a structure, because no market can exist without structure. And that structure is analogous to a sovereign. And that structure may be technical, mechanical or technical, as Professor Lessig said, or it may be legal, or it may be sometimes self-governing of groups of like property groups. Yeah? And I think what we have to find in order to shut down the authentic side is the right mechanism to shut it. And it isn't the model that we have now. And maybe this one.
I mean, one of the key things about the internet is netiquette, and it's a common courtesy. And to me, the question is, how do you apply law on a common courtesy? If you want Stan, or you don't want Stan. If you don't want Stan, then there's a group of organizations out there that you can set up your mail server to block Stan. And it's common courtesy, and once again, like was said earlier, that if somebody wants to put out the site and the government shuts it down, it's going to get mirrored by somebody else who wants it up. It's a community of people helping each other getting information across. And it's an open community, and it isn't regulated. And there's issues with that, and somewhat related to an open market is if you get on the internet and you want to buy, you want to see this, you can see it. If you don't want to see it, then don't put it there. And I agree with the open market idea that if you want to buy, you can buy, but the difficulty is taking the legal piece of netiquette and having to apply that technically into the infrastructure that's already there.
One of the things that I know Esther Dyson has talked a lot about relying on the market for regulating. There are a couple issues that, at least for me, that are flagged. One is that Esther Dyson has suggested a concept of solving Bill's emailing costs a problem. And that's basically, she's convinced that technology is going to develop such that whenever you email a message to someone, it's going to prompt you, it's going to prompt for a payment of digital cash. And that people who know you will waive that, and so it'll basically be, you'll sort of, get in for free. But people you don't know will be prompted, and if they really want you to get this, ask for a phone card, then they'll pay it. Otherwise, they won't.
Is that the business model she's funding lately?
It's probably what she's writing about it, yeah. But anyway, depending on how we think about, that has dramatic implications for what we think of Bill's theory. So for people who think that people should have, this is a public forum and they should have this right, then we've just abridged, the market has just abridged this right. The other concept is that there's lots of transactions that we might question whether the market is a really proper, what we as an arm normative perspective, we would think is good. And I'm thinking of particularly the trade, increasingly common trade in wives. You can go on the internet and purchase a wife from Taiwan. Now, some people might say, the people consented to this, there's mutual consent. There's no need to perfect sort of the idea of market regulating itself. Others have objected that this is the epitome of sort of the coercive power you have. On one hand, a very an educated, most likely an educated, well-funded American resident speaking to probably someone who's was raised in utter poverty, who's looking basically to get out of the country and is willing to sell herself. So, I mean, it kind of depends on on I think that the content, those are issues that, for me at least, I wonder about when I think of the market as a problem.
But even in the market, we don't allow the physical market to sell
by. Oh, exactly. But it's how you regulate those. So it seems to raise. Okay.
Same answer to American newspaper. I mean, there's nothing going on.
Personal.
Well, that's true, but I was also thinking of sort of the architecture again, like in the sense of how an amateur accountable for things. But I just think of pornography as a really good example in the sense that even in real estate, if you're going to go check your pornography out, you at least have to go either to the newsstand and buy it or walk into the door. I mean, there's all sorts of just other structures out there. Or even in that case, you have to figure out what this ad is and how am I going to go buy that. And I'm not saying if you really want to watch from Taiwan, you probably go take 2 steps to the store and get the magazine to figure it out. But it just seems to me that just as these sort of background things do change, the sort of norms that the structure are kind of, anonymity is a great example. The things that you would do in cyberspace that you wouldn't do in real estate do kind of change the ways we act in a sense, and we do have to reconsider that we have a balance right now between how much market we allow and how much law we want to regulate those kind of. So it's also because there's sort of this architecture out there that kind of tells us what we can do, what are the things that, how we can do things, how detected are we when we're doing different things, and how obvious is it. I don't know, so I started thinking about that a lot, and for me that makes me not say right away, that's okay, just because you can do that in the real space means you can do it on cyberspace, because there's all sorts of other social factors that shape our conduct, and as soon as those things are stripped away in cyberspace, in a sense, although I'm telling you, I guess I would say to someone too, but still, you know, you could be detected because they have a log of every webpage you've ever traveled to. So in a sense, that undermines the idea that I'm totally private in what I'm doing online, but you're actually less private than you could ever be if you can kind of slip in and out of that little, you know, shop in Times Square. It's a lot less privacy in a sense, but it's just a matter of really understanding and thinking about those other dynamics that are shaping people's conduct. And if those other social forces aren't there, then maybe this is time for laws will kind of come in there and reestablish that considered balance that we have in our society about how people, what's proper conduct. Because right now, norms, not the extra legal norms, are doing a lot of the trick for us, I think, in ways that maybe they won't do online. An idea. Maybe not.
Well, for an online stand, on behalf of, Kathleen and Bill feel the same way, but I want to thank Jonathan and the train for being our advisor, because not only did you take on one of us, but you had three of us as advisees, and that's a really big task, and it was above and beyond the call of duty, and I know we all really appreciate it. Thank you.
And the versus.
Yeah, the versus.
Thank you
very much. Thank you all for coming. And next week, Carl.